This is your AEW Dynamite review for February 5th, 2020 from Huntsville, Alabama, the Von Braun Center. I haven't heard the Von Braun Center mentioned since the WCW days. Pretty sure WCW ran a whole bunch of events there back in the day. But before we get into all the AEW stuff, I would be remiss if I did not mention this. This is a historic day on the wrestling calendar. I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but it was on this date, 32 years ago. If you don't feel old, you're going to feel old now. 32 years ago today, on February 5th, 1988, that WWE aired its first live main event special on NBC, which featured the end of Hulk Hogan's first four-year reign as WWE champion. Looking to beat Andre the Giant for the second time. It did not happen. He lost to the Giant. He blamed his defeat on the crooked Hebner twin. How much money for the plastic surgery? They were identical. Mean Gene, he cried like a bitch on live TV. The evil Hebner twin angle, I maintain, is still one of the greatest wrestling angles of all time. It was nearly pitch perfect. That whole period there, 88, 89, that and the Mega Powers angle, which supposedly was the brainchild, at least in part, of Elizabeth. Just awesome. Awesome storylines. But the story here is, you know, Dave Hebner wanted to get his brother Earl a job in the WWF. Earl had been working for Jim Crockett Promotions. Vince McMahon had no idea that Dave Hebner even had an identical twin brother to begin with. So when Dave mentioned it, all of a sudden, Vince's ears perked up, and they kept it under wraps so nobody would find out. 33 million people tuned in to at least part of the show that night. Think about that. 33 million people. WWE is live on Fox now, every week. And they're lucky to get 2.5 million. They do cartwheels if they do 2.5 million. And to be fair, AEW and NXT, they get even less than that. The world is a very different place now. The television viewing world is very different now. And now Earl is all elite. At least I think he is. We don't see him very often. Probably just for the pay-per-views. Anyway, the polls are open for the AEW show tonight if you want to vote. At Solomonster. I did say polls as in plural. That's not another Manscaped pun. You can vote in the AEW poll, vote in the NXT poll, at Solomonster on Twitter. I'll flash the results later on. Let's see if we can get to 300 likes on this video. That's the goal tonight, 300. Thumbs up. And hit the sub button. Also, Super Chats are open, including a brand new Disappointed Solomonster donation for $5. And as always, Russo on a poll for 10 bucks or more. You'll see the Disappointed Solomonster face. That's the face I usually make during Monday Night Raw. More so lately on SmackDown. Rarely on this show. I actually thought tonight's show was pretty good, on the whole. One note on AEW Dark, on last night's show on YouTube. Awesome Kong, they did an angle where Awesome Kong was beaten up by Mel and Luther of the Nightmare Collective. And in storyline, they're saying Kong is now out indefinitely with serious injuries. So you might be asking, well, why the hell would they do that? Why would they kick Awesome Kong out of the Nightmare Collective? Are they going to end this horrible angle? Probably not. It was done to explain Kong being away starting next month. She's going to be filming the fourth and final season of GLOW on Netflix, which is actually a damn good show. If you do not watch GLOW, I would suggest that you give it a shot. I think it's a very entertaining show. They are heading into the final season. And she has a role on it. Not for nothing. Awesome Kong is really good on that show. So anyway, the Nightmare Collective, I guess, is going to need a new barber going forward. This could be a new role for Brutus Beefcake. What's he doing? He's not doing much these days. Can bring in Brutus Beefcake. He can be cutting hair for Brandi Rhodes. Show opened with Pirate John Moxley coming out of the crowd for his match against Ortiz of the Inner Circle with his partner Santana in his corner. And Le Champion, Chris Jericho, joined Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur on commentary for the match. Sammy Guevara was out there. Jake Hager, of course, he doesn't say anything. He just stands there in the background. So Ortiz, you know, he's going after Moxley's eye patch, punching him in the eye. Throws Moxley eye first into the ring steps. And Moxley fights back, gets a figure four leg lock on him, hits a suicide dive. Ortiz comes right back, hits a tope of his own. Even Jim Ross couldn't resist. He said to Excalibur, "What is it?" And Excalibur said, "Tope suicida." And Ortiz hit a top rope splash, fisherman suplex for a couple of near falls. Santana got up on the apron and went for the distraction. Ortiz accidentally runs into Santana, knocks him down to the floor. Moxley hits the Death Rider out of nowhere and scores the pinfall. I mean, no shock there. You knew Moxley was going to get a win heading into Revolution, as I suspect he will next week as well against Santana. So Santana jumps Moxley after the match. Moxley fights him off, and he pulls out of his pocket the keys to the Ford GT that I was going to say he stole, but really he was gifted by Chris Jericho in the Inner Circle. Jericho's on commentary losing his shit. He's screaming, "It's my car. I want it back." Well, I mean, it's Shad Khan's car. It's not Chris Jericho's car. Shad Khan can go out and buy three more tomorrow if he wants to. So Moxley looks over at Jericho by the announce position, and he mouths to him. He says, "Eye for an eye." And he jams the car key into Santana's eye, and then he retreats into the audience. Rest of the Inner Circle runs down. Medics are tending to Santana. So, you know, look, eye for an eye. I think it's very clever. I think it was a good angle. And it's going to continue on into next week. I talked about this last week. They've got several weeks between now and the pay-per-view. Pay-per-view's not until the very end of the month, the final day of the month. They've got to keep things interesting somehow. Moxley can't just get beaten up every week. He's got to, you know, fight back tooth and nail. And so this is the natural continuation of that story. So I thought this was fine. I thought this was a fine open to the show. Yes, as Cyrus in the chat says, "Daddy's car." In case you didn't know, the car they used in the angle a few weeks ago, that was apparently Shad Khan's car. Shad Khan worth $7 billion, so I think he can afford it. Stephen Fowler, thank you for the $9.99 Super Chat. 1 cent shy of Russo on a pole, so instead you get no ma'am. There's Al Bundy, Jefferson Darcy, and Bob Rooney. I miss Married with Children. One of my all-time favorite shows. We had the Best Friends with Orange Cassidy in their corner in training. Actually, let me switch things here. I still had the NBC. I was so hung up on the main event from 88, I still had the main event slide up for me. Thank you for telling me, by the way. You guys got to help me out here in the chat. You got to let me know these things. There we go. There's that beautiful AEW Dynamite slide. The work of the very talented Steve Mello, who I cannot say enough good things about for all the work he helps me out with here on the YouTube channel. Best Friends with Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy in training for his match against Minoru Suzuki, WrestleMania weekend at Joey Janela's Spring Break Show. I am going to talk more about this weekend. I see a lot of people very up in arms about this, man. How can Minoru Suzuki be a part of something, comedy? These people don't know what they're talking about. I'm going to talk more about that on Sunday. Anyway, Best Friends against SCU, no Fallen Angel in their corner. More on that in a second. I thought this was fun. You know, I thought they had a fun match, except for the post-match angle, which I was not too fond of. Now, early on in this match, this was not a good night for Jim Ross. Jim Ross, in talking about Frankie Kazarian and how he needed to make a tag to his partner, Scorpio Sky, said he needed to tag in his explosive partner, Too Cold Scorpio. Now, he tried to save things by claiming that he had Too Cold Scorpio on his mind because earlier in the day before the show, he and Scorpio Sky just so happened to be talking about Too Cold Scorpio. I'm sure they were. I just thought that was too funny. Too Cold Scorpio. We have a Too Cold Scorpio reference here on Dynamite. Hey, Too Cold Scorpio was a hell of a talent. He deserves some recognition. So I don't mind. But yet another name fucked up by Jim Ross. It's sad to see, but what are you going to do? There's a point later on where all four men were down outside the ring, and Orange Cassidy is just he's like strolling through the cemetery. All the dead bodies laying around him. So what does he do? He lays down next to them, of course. A big bump he took. So finally for the finish, Scorpio Sky, or should I say Too Cold Scorpio, drop kicked Kazarian in the back as Kaz hit a destroyer on Trent. Trent, don't call me Taven, and pinned him. So SCU picks up the win. As soon as the match was over, the Dark Order hits the ring. So down comes the Dark Order. They attack all of the baby faces. They attack SCU. They attack the best friends. That leaves Orange Cassidy, who comes into the ring. He puts his hands in his pockets before being ganged up on and laid out. They beat the hell out of Orange Cassidy. Finally, out comes Christopher Daniels. He decides to finally show up to make the save. Maybe he was in the back taking a shit. I don't know what he was doing. Maybe he had an important phone call that he was going to take, like me, which is why I was a few minutes late tonight. Because, of course, as I'm about to go live, my phone rings at 10:02. Because, of course. So, maybe, look, I could sympathize. Maybe Daniels was in the back and, he had a very important phone call that he had to take. We're in the presidential political season here. Maybe he was getting a phone call from some polling place. They wanted to poll him to see who he was going to vote for. I don't know. So he finally makes his way out to the ring to make the save, and the Dark Order, they don't go after him, they back off. They leave the ring. I just think Daniels waited an awfully long time to come to the aid of his friends, well after they were already beaten up, dropping even more hints that Daniels eventually could be revealed as the Exalted One. And I've talked about that here before. It just seems like they're dropping. Now they're not so subtle. Before it was almost subtle hints that, it was going to be him. The wrestling fan in me, just judging by the way they've booked this angle so far, it just seems very obvious that Daniels is going to be revealed. Maybe they'll swerve us. When I did the prediction show a few weeks ago, I do a prediction podcast at the beginning of every year. And my prediction for who the Exalted One would be revealed as was Broken Matt Hardy. I think Broken Matt could leave WWE and have a nice little run for himself in AEW, and he would be a good fit if they're going to continue this Dark Order angle, which just feels like it's dragging now. He would be, I think, an entertaining piece of the puzzle here. So I would love to see him jump to AEW and be slotted in as the leader of the Dark Order. I saw his wife, Rebby, who Rebby doesn't care. Rebby will tweet and post whatever the hell she wants. She put a tweet out earlier, a meme. I don't know if she made it or somebody else made it, and she just shared it, of Nancy Pelosi from the State of the Union address ripping up the president's speech. And as she's doing this in the meme, it shows that the papers being ripped up represent her husband's ideas, and Nancy Pelosi represents Vince McMahon. So clearly something must have happened. She said, "Interesting day at the Hardy compound," and posted that picture. So clearly something must have happened. I don't know. She didn't seem very happy. I guess based on the tone and tenor of her tweet, there seems to be a lot of discontent in Hardy land right now. And Matt's contract is coming up less than a month, I believe, or about a month he's got left on his WWE contract. So unless he signs a new deal with them in the next few weeks, he's as good as gone. I think he needs to just get the hell out of there. The quicker he gets out of there, the better off he'll be. AEW seems like a natural landing spot for him. If they give him some creative leeway that he does not have in WWE, Matt's a smart guy. I think he can contribute a lot, not just for himself even. I think he can be a valuable contributor on that AEW roster. So I'm hoping that we'll have a chance to see him, hopefully. We'll find out. But this just seems like it's going in the direction of Daniels to me. Brian, I don't know if Brian did Brian's Super Chat pop up? I don't know. I see it listed elsewhere. I didn't see the graphic pop up. But thank you for the $5. Says, "I believe Britt Baker is the daughter of Isaac Yankem, DDS confirmed." Oh, there it is. There it is. Disappointed Solomonster, your new $5 Super Chat. Now, the question is, you've got to figure out why I'm so disappointed in my reaction there. I'm telling you, that's my Monday Night Raw face. Not the last couple of weeks. It's been showing some positive improvements. That's my SmackDown face. So thank you to Brian. And Casey is Raw. Thank you for the $2 super chat. Speaking of Britt Baker, perfect timing. Britt Baker, DMD, against Yuka Sakazaki, making her Dynamite debut. Whereas Matt Riddle would say her Dynamite debut tonight on TNT. Now, we first saw Yuka at Double or Nothing in Vegas last May. And we saw her again the following month in June at Fyter Fest. And as Excalibur pointed out tonight, we have not seen her since. We have not seen her since until now. She is making her Dynamite debut here on this show. Now, Yuka is a tiny woman, but she's talented and she's fun to watch. She hit what she calls her Magical Girl Splash, a name that Jim Ross proceeded to mock. Jim Ross. He was also being very creepy, almost Jerry Lawler-like, a little bit later on when Penelope Ford came out. Now, I cannot blame JR for feeling a funny feeling when Penelope Ford comes out. I'm not faulting him for that, but what is he now, 70 years old? It's a little creepy. So yeah, he kind of mocked the magical girl splash here for Yuka. Beth went for her lockjaw submission. Yuka pulled her into a crucifix and pinned her for the surprise win here in this match. It was a surprise at least to Britt Baker. That's it came off at least as a surprise. And Britt grabbed the ring bell from the timekeeper's table. She hit Yuka from behind with it before referee Aubrey Edwards yanked it out of her hand. She went to put her hand in Yuka's mouth for the mandible claw, but Yuka bit down on the bottom rope, did her best Tomohiro Ishii impression. And so Baker, basically what she ended up doing, she says, like, all right, you're going to bite the bottom rope? Fine. And she curb stomped her as Yuka was biting down on the bottom rope. And Yuka comes up with a bloody mouth. She spits out what appeared to be part of a tooth or spit out one of her teeth. And she then ends up putting her hand in Yuka's mouth, her bloody mouth, and puts the lockjaw on anyway. The match itself was really nothing special. It was more of a showcase for Sakazaki to do some of her moves, showcase her in her first TV match. But I thought the post-match angle worked well because, Yuka was very well liked when she came out. And Baker is hated. These people hate Britt Baker. They do not like her. They do not like her matches, whatever it is about her. If they think she's a terrible wrestler, or they just don't like the dentist, if they're a bunch of anti-dentites, whatever it is, she's getting a lot of heat. Plus, you had blood. Blood can add a lot to an angle when used sparingly. So to that end, I actually think this worked. And it's like I said a few weeks ago, it doesn't improve her matches. I still have yet to see a ton of improvement in Britt Baker matches, but I think it's the best move that they could have made is to turn this woman heel. Jose Inoue, thank you for the $5 disappointed Solomonster super chat. I'm not disappointed in your super chat, I will say that. And Jared M with the Russo on a poll. He says, creepy JR equals gold. I don't know about that. Actually, holy shit, $25. $25 from Jared gets Russo on a poll. Thank you, Jared. I appreciate that. Very cool of you. Again, super chats are open. And by the way, some people who don't do the super chat thing, just so you know, here on the YouTube channel, if you go to the main channel page for Solomonster Sounds Off, you will see a PayPal button or a PayPal link of some kind up on the top, sort of right side nav bar on the page. If you want to just do a traditional PayPal donation, it won't pop up on screen here during the stream, but just FYI, you can do that as well. So then it was time for The Butcher and The Blade. Do you believe I got two messages in the last couple of weeks? Now, it's only two people, but I got two messages from people who were vehemently against even the idea that I would still call The Butcher and The Blade. I would say their names the way that they do. It bothered them so much they threatened to not even watch the content anymore on the channel. For the 2 seconds it takes me to announce these people, this bothered them so much. So, of course, I'm just going to continue to do it, since more people seem to enjoy it than not. It's kind of my thing now. So we had the Butcher and the Blade with the Bunny teaming up with the Lucha Bros, Pentagon and Phoenix. They took on the Elite, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, and the Young Bucks. And this match was, in a word, just ridiculous. It's like a video game. It was like a video game, only real. That's one of the best descriptions I can come up with for this. Some crazy, insane spots here during this match. They came back from commercial midway through. Matt Jackson, he got a hot tag, and he ran wild. Whole bunch of Northern Light suplexes on the Lucha Bros. Omega and the Butcher, they ended up as the legal men. Omega hits a Hurricane Rana, tags in Hangman Page. Hangman Page goes nuts. Crowd goes nuts for him. They're chanting cowboy shit. He hit this beautiful moonsault. Charlotte Flair. I haven't seen NXT yet, but I hope Charlotte, when she leaves Full Sail and goes back to her hotel room tonight, I hope Charlotte can find a replay of this and can watch Dynamite back and just watch this match. And watch the moonsault that Hangman Page gave. It wiped everybody out. All the people, just wiped them all out on the floor with this moonsault. A beautiful moonsault by Hangman Page. So Pentagon hits a destroyer to Matt Jackson. The Butcher hits a powerbomb on Nick Jackson. Omega hits Phoenix and Pentagon and the Blade with Snapdragon suplexes. Slice bread by Matt Jackson to the Butcher. Omega hits a V-trigger on Phoenix. So Page and Pentagon end up as the legal men. The Bucks, they want Adam Page to tag them in. He refuses. He's like, I got this. Hangman Page has got this. Only he doesn't. Pentagon hits a destroyer on him. Phoenix and Pentagon hit their combination double stomp package pile driver to Hangman. Phoenix hits a tope to Kenny Omega. Pentagon pinch Page. So after the match, Page is arguing with the rest of the Elite. And then he leaves and he goes and drinks beer with the fans. Skip ahead later in the show, backstage. Hangman Page is in the back. And the Young Bucks come up to him, and they're very upset. And they're asking, what's your problem? What is your problem? And I think it was Matt Jackson. He then alludes to the fact, he goes, actually, I think we know what your problem is, before they storm off. At which point, Adam Page then, it was out of camera frame, but then he lifts his hand up, and he reveals a giant pitcher of beer in his hand, which he proceeds to chug. I love how Adam Page, here's the thing about this, my biggest takeaway from this whole storyline, is that Adam Page now has a drinking problem, right? I love how Adam Page is more over now than he has ever been at any other point in his career. Far more over than he was when he was challenging Chris Jericho to become the first AEW champion at the end of the summer, when I said it would be a mistake. It was too early to put the title on him. It had to be Chris Jericho. And a lot of people agreed with that, and a lot of people didn't agree with that. And they said, oh, Jericho, he's a WWE guy. He's almost 50 years old. He's washed up. What are you going to put the title on him for? And a lot of those people were made to look like fools, because Chris Jericho was the only choice that made sense to be the AEW, the first AEW champion. It was the right move to make. And Hangman was not ready. Hangman is more ready now than he was 6 months ago. And he's a lot more over now. But what I love about this is he's more over now than ever before for being a raging alcoholic. These people are cheering him, and the man has a drinking problem. What does that say about all these fans? All these enablers out there. They're not helping him. They're driving this man to an early demise. They're being a bad influence. That's terrible, but funny. Howie Mandela, thank you for the $9.99 super chat earlier. Brian with the $2 super chat. And Jacob Harrison with the $5 disappointed Solid Monster super chat. Jacob Donnelly, I don't remember if I mentioned you earlier. If I did, I just mentioned you again. So thank you. See, I know some people find it annoying, but I will never miss an opportunity to thank the people who support me. If you don't like it, tough shit. You can go somewhere else. We come back from commercial break. Tony Schiavone is in the ring with Kenny Omega. This is immediately after the 8-man tag that I just mentioned. So, Schiavone's in the ring with Kenny. All of a sudden, Pack pops up on the Tron. Pack is in the back being interviewed by Lexi. I believe Lexi, this new interviewer, is actually one of Diamond Dallas Page's daughters. I believe that's who she is. And standing next to Pack is the women's champion, Riho. Now, Kenny Omega and Riho, they just won the first ever mixed tag team match on Dark this week, beating Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford. I didn't see it. I my understanding is it aired on Dark this week. If so, that's the match that took place on the Jericho Cruise. And that was the first mixed tag in AEW history where men were allowed to fight women, women were allowed to fight men. So, you know, Omega and Riho, I think Omega helped bring Riho in. They have a close relationship. How close? I don't know. I don't want to get into that. But they're close, clearly. Clearly, Riho means something to Kenny Omega. And she's in the back, and Paige is talking, or Pac, rather, is talking. And Pac says, you know, we're supposed to have a contract signing with you right now, but you ruined that. You ruined that by having a match, and clearly you don't care about your friend Michael Nakazawa. You left him for dead more than once. So Pac says, we're going to find out how much you really care about Riho. And he's, you know, threatening basically to beat the shit out of this woman is basically what he's teasing here. And Omega says, whatever you want. I'll give you whatever you want. A match? You got your match. Whatever you want. And Pac says, you thought I was going to beat up a woman. I mean, I know I'm a bastard, but I'm not a beast. And that is when Nyla Rose came from out of nowhere. She laid out Riho, powerbombed her on the, I guess, the table that would have been used for the contract signing. The table didn't fully break because Riho is like 40 pounds. And Nyla Rose said she was marking her territory for next week. And I'll have a rundown of some of the things coming up next week here in a little bit. We'll get to that. We have Joey Janela. Joey Janela was out for a match against Superbad Kip Sabian with Janela's real-life ex-girlfriend Penelope Ford in Sabian's corner. That's got to be awkward. Every time I see these guys working together, I don't know. Just seems, I don't know how I would react if I guess I would like to think I would be a professional in that scenario, but I would have to think on some level that's got to be a little bit weird, right, for Joey Janela. I mean, what, I'm curious, like, if you were in that situation, you know, would you just be able to have your ex-girlfriend, I guess it all depends on whether or not the breakup was amicable or not, but, you know, she's out there, she's beating up Janela, kicking the shit out of him. I guess they must be on good terms if they're going to work together. I just think that would be weird. So they brawl right away. Janela takes control. He's choking out Kip Sabian. Skipping ahead a little bit here. Sabian takes the referee and distracts him. Penelope Ford outside's raking Janela's eyes. And at one point she rammed him, you know, the back of his head into the steel ring steps. She was relentless with her ex-boyfriend here. Sabian missed the springboard. He gets dumped, and Janela follows that up with a suicide dive. Tope suicida, as Excalibur would say. Another distraction by Penelope Ford, and Sabian hits a penalty kick. Janela, though, hits a German suplex on the floor. And back inside, big lariat, two count only. Sabian counters with a DVD. Janela catches him with a super kick. And this goes on for a few more minutes. Finally, at one point, Ford grabs the referee, kisses Sabian. Penelope gets knocked to the floor. She takes a bump, and that allows Kip Sabian to cradle Joey Janela with the tights, hooked, for the win. You know, match itself was okay. I'm just not really into this, to be honest. And here's one thing I've noticed. Outside of a few moments, you know, the people like Joey Janela, and Joey's got a good thing going with the spring break shows. He's a very creative guy in that respect. You know, he's kind of made his mark. That's why he's become as popular as he's become. And he can work, you know. I think back to the match he had with Jon Moxley last year, many months ago, and that might have been on Dark, actually. Actually, it wasn't against Moxley. I take that back. I think it was the match with Omega. But we've seen matches where, you know, Joey Janela has, like, hardcore matches taken a lot of abuse, and they've gotten a lot of reaction. But a lot of the stuff we've seen him do recently, you know, the stuff with Sean Spears, now the stuff with Kip Sabian, it doesn't get a lot of heat, I've noticed. So maybe the people like Joey, and maybe he is popular to some degree, but his matches don't get a lot of reaction. They just don't get a lot of heat. So I'm not sure if it's just the people he's working with. Kip Sabian's not really that big of a name. Or is Joey Janela the problem? Is Joey Janela really not as big of a star as he is portrayed to be? You know, I would think to this audience he is, but based on some of the reactions a lot of his matches get, I'm not so sure about that. So there really isn't a whole lot of heat to this, but in any event, Jericho's in the back. Chris Jericho's in the back with the rest of the Inner Circle, and he is not happy. He is ranting about what happened earlier with Jon Moxley. Santana now, much like Moxley, has a eye patch wrapped around his head. And he gets the chance for the first time, does Santana, to cut his own promo. And he made mention here that it's no secret that I just went through the worst month of my life. And for those who don't know, that's a reference to his father passing away. His father, his dad died a few weeks ago. So it's been a very shitty month for him. So he kind of dropped a little reference in there to that. Cut what I thought was a very passionate promo on Jon Moxley, and now it sets up a match between them for next week. It's going to be eye for an eye. They didn't really explain what that meant. I don't know if the loser gets to pluck the other eye out if the winner gets to pluck the loser's eye out, make them go totally blind. They didn't really explain. But it will be eye for an eye. Jon Moxley against Santana. We're also going to get SCU challenging Hangman Page and Kenny Omega for the AEW Tag Team titles. And then in 2 weeks, Dynamite is going to be in Atlanta. They're going to hold a Tag Team Battle Royal, with the winners getting a shot at the Tag Team Championships at the Revolution pay-per-view on February 29th. Also in 2 weeks in Atlanta, that is the night that Cody will meet Wardlow. Wardlow's going to make his in-ring Dynamite debut. That's either going to be really, really good or really, really bad. We're going to see what Wardlow is all about in the ring. And that's going to be the first ever steel cage match in AEW history. That's in 2 weeks in Atlanta. And then in 3 weeks, which I believe that's got to be the go-home show to Revolution. 3 weeks in Kansas City, we're going to get a 30-minute Iron Man match between Pac and Kenny Omega. So this will be an opportunity for Omega to have, you know, possibly the kind of match that he really made a name for himself off of working in New Japan. You know, in New Japan, working against Okada and Jericho and Tanahashi and Ishii and Elgin and, you know, Ibushi and all of these different people that he had a chance to work with, and some of these great classic New Japan matches that he had. A lot of them went 25, 30, 40 minutes or longer. He's guaranteed to go 30 minutes here with Pac. Pac is no slouch. The only thing is, unfortunately, when you're live on TNT like this, you've got to contend with commercials. So you figure you probably get three different commercial breaks out of it. That kind of kills the momentum a little bit. But this will be a good chance, I think, for Omega to go out there and have the kind of match that I think people were hoping and expecting that he would have when he signed with AEW. So that should be a great one. That's coming up in 3 weeks. Show ended with Cody taking his 10 lashes from MJF. That was one of the provisions, stipulations, that Cody had to agree to in order to get his match with MJF at Revolution. Brian, thank you for the $7 super chat. Appreciate that. So MJF and Wardlow, they're out first. Cody comes out, takes his suit jacket off. He's got to survive all 10 lashes of the belt. MJF says, look, I don't want to use my belt. I don't want to ruin my perfectly good leather belt on your body. I want to use your belt. So he's going to use Cody's own belt. That's to add, I guess, to the to the embarrassment for him. And so here we go. And MJF, he's kind of teasing Cody for a little bit. Then he gives him a whip. And, you know, at first it's not very hard. And takes his jacket off. And we look up on stage. And the Butcher and the Blade, they're out. And the Bunny, and they come out. And, you know, people are coming out to watch. They want to get a front row seat of what's going on here. And MJF hits another whip. And Cody is just, you know, he's ready to punch this guy in the face, but he can't do it. Can't put his hands on MJF. If he does, he doesn't get his match at the pay-per-view. No contact. Those are the rules. And Arn Anderson eventually comes walking out. Coach. Coach Arn Anderson. The Bill Belichick, the Andy Reid, I guess, of AEW. He comes out to fire up Cody. MJF is mocking him, and MJF is telling Cody, look, just quit. You don't have to go through this. Just quit. Cody refuses. He says, give me more. So we get the fifth lashing, and Cody falls to the floor, and his brother comes out. Here comes Dustin, and Dustin wants to take the rest of the lashes for his little brother. I can't watch my little brother take this abuse. And MJF says, fuck off. Those aren't the rules. He's got to take them, not you. Go sit your ass down. And MJF hits him a sixth time. He hits Cody a seventh time. The Young Bucks come out. And, you know, MJF reminds them and everybody else, nobody can help. Stay away. Nobody can help Cody here. And he hits him the eighth time. Wardlow says, give it to me. He takes the strap and he waylays Cody with this belt. Cody falls to the floor. Now Brandy is out. So this is one of those things that I, and this is one of the reasons I hate the Nightmare Collective stuff. So I'm going to go on a little bit of a mini rant here, so bear with me. I have not been a fan of the Nightmare Collective stuff. It's just not my thing. They tried something new. I think it's been a total failure. Now they've kicked Awesome Kong out of the group, so what the hell's the point? But the reason I hated it is because one of the things that AEW, I think, was trying to do, or at least that I was kind of hoping they would do, is they would go for kind of a more realistic approach. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still pro wrestling. You're going to have Orange Cassidy and stuff like that, and that's fine. But you have Brandy, who at the very beginning was actually kind of booked as this great babyface. They put a video package together for her last year talking about her background as an ice skater and how, you know, she's crying and it didn't work out. And, she, you know, things worked out for her in the end, but she really wanted to be this professional ice skater and her dreams and hopes were dashed. And then they turned her heel. And that was weird. And then it was weirder when they started the stupid storyline. It was almost like this weird goth, like, dark group. It absolutely did not fit her personality whatsoever. It's like, we have to find a role for Cody's wife on this show. She wants to be the bad guy. Let's come up with a role for her. Even if it means bad television, let's just come up with a role for Brandy. Now, I can understand Brandy wanting to maybe kind of break out on her own. She doesn't want to just be Cody's wife. That I understand. But that was the perfect role for her. She came out as his valet. She was well-liked. Cody is probably the most over person they even have on the whole roster. Here she came out as the concerned wife, telling her husband, one more, you can do it. You got one more left. You can get through this. But they completely just kind of, it's almost like the Nightmare Collective doesn't even exist, that they're ignoring their own storyline. If they just wouldn't do it in the first place, that'd be even better. The way they ignored it here, I'm not even sure why they would continue doing it at all. It's a stupid storyline. Brandy's, she's a strong woman, she stands by her man, that's fine. And you can have her do other things on the show, you know, offhand, I don't know what it would be, but you know, if she, I don't want to say she should be wrestling for the women's championship, but the Nightmare Collective stuff, it's got to go. It's got to go. And the way they ignored it here just drove that point home even more. It's got to go. It is stupid. It is not entertaining. I have yet to talk to anybody who has counted. Every time I go off on this, usually I have somebody who comes at me and says, Solomon, so you're being too hard on this angle. Or, no, you're being too hard on this person. I like them. They're really good. Baron Corbin's really good. There's always the contrarian point of view. I have yet to hear from anybody who has come at me and said, you're wrong about the Nightmare Collective. The Nightmare Collective is great. I love the Nightmare Collective. Not one person. Not one. What does that tell you? So if anything comes out of this, and I'm sure it won't, I really would like to see them drop that shit. The Dark Order is enough. We don't need the Nightmare Collective. And maybe with Kong being out of it, maybe they will drop it. Maybe Kong being put out for a while is the perfect out for for them to drop this stupid storyline. Brandy can be more effective in this role than she is in that other one. The other one just seems like a forced television storyline. This felt real. I like this angle they did with the lashing. It made people uncomfortable. People like Cody. MJF's whole objective here was to make this kid suffer. So his brother comes out, his best friends come out, his wife comes out, Arn Anderson comes out. They wanted you to feel sympathy for him. They wanted you to feel real emotion. This was an old school wrestling angle, and it worked. That's the kind of shit that I'd like to see them do more of. So Cody took that 10th and final lash. And then MJF, I believe he kicked him in the dick. Yeah, I think he gave Cody a low blow, which infuriated Jim Ross. And so MJF ran away into the crowd. Him and Wardlow, they took off. And I was wrapping up my notes, so I only caught a brief glimpse of it. So in the chat, tell me if I miss more. But I did notice it what looked like a fan jumping MJF, and they quickly cut away. The camera cut away. See, that's old school heat right there. When you've got people so angry that they go after the talent and they jump the talent. Not that I'm condoning it. But that's old school heat right there. But maybe I'm wrong. Again, I only glanced at it. Maybe it was a plant. Maybe maybe I'm wrong about that, but it looked like a fan jumped MJF and they cut away. Which is kind of funny because if you look on this channel, the latest RSPW Rewind segment from last Sunday's podcast touched on the live event riots on back-to-back nights at WWE events in 1997. There were riots at two shows back-to-back, one in Memphis and one in Little Rock, Arkansas, back in 97 when Shawn Michaels got hit with something or Triple H got hit with some debris from the crowd, and Shawn Michaels said, guess what? You just lost your main event. And he left, and they never came back out. And the people freaked out, and these riots ensued. And I did a whole segment about this past weekend about whose fault is that? You know, are the fans to blame? Which they are, because you can't riot and you can't throw batteries and bottles and shit at the talent. But at the same time, that's old school shit. When you get people that pissed off and that riled up, you don't see that these days, you know, when people used to throw garbage at the NWO. I will say, I mean, even though I think it's better that people don't do that, the visual of that, you got to admit that the visual of that added a lot. It added a lot when it came to heat, just heat on those guys. Visceral heat, visceral hatred that people would have throwing garbage at you. That's old school shit. And I know that doesn't even compare to what happens in Puerto Rico. I got an email from somebody saying, dude, he lives in Puerto Rico. He's been a fan of Puerto Rican wrestling for a long time. Carlos Colon's promotion. The stuff that goes on there is absolutely insane. Especially back in the old days, but even today, apparently. You know, you don't want to be caught in a riot in Puerto Rico, put it that way. So anyway, that's how they went off the air here. And I enjoyed this angle. I like MJF anyway as a heel. I think he's great. I think he's just a nice throwback. Cody is great in his role. And they're building this matchup nicely. You know, I like what they've done. The lashes come this week. The cage match in 2 weeks. You know, they have to stretch this out somehow to get to Revolution. So when this match comes, it's going to be a big deal. And then the question is, does Cody get the big win? Or does MJF win? And do they even drag this out more? I think Cody probably gets the win. But, you know, I wouldn't mind MJF getting a win. And then they can drag this out a little bit more and somehow put more heat on this feud. And maybe they can blow it off on an episode of Dynamite, you know, sometime in March or April. So that was your Dynamite show tonight. Let's take a look at what you guys thought of the shows. Which show did you like better for the ones who did check out both? I know some people watch both shows simultaneously. And Brian, thank you for the $2 super chat. MJF, he says, is pure evil. Well, that's why he's a good heel. Because he's a dick. I mean, people laugh and they like him. They like the fact that he does evil shit because you don't have too many heels like him today. But there really is nothing that MJF does that should get you to cheer for him. I feel like what he's doing is fine. He's doing the heel playbook. You know, he stays in character all the time. He heels on the fans. He heels on his opponents. He heels on the announcers. There really are no redeemable qualities about this guy. But I think people kind of like that because you don't have a lot of heels like him. It's like Bobby Heenan. If Bobby Heenan was around today, the Bobby Heenan of old, Bobby Heenan was entertaining as shit. I love Bobby Heenan. But Bobby Heenan, there was nothing that he was doing that really would get you to cheer him. But I think Bobby Heenan would be cheered wildly today. You know, when he would walk out to manage or go to the announce booth, he'd probably be turned babyface by the fans on second week on TV. AEW poll, here we go. 866 votes so far. 80. 80% thumbs up, 20% thumbs down. So an overwhelmingly positive score for AEW and NXT. 500 votes, a little over 500. 75% thumbs up. And about 25% thumbs down. So a higher positive score so far for AEW than we have for NXT. I am looking forward to that NXT show. I know Charlotte Flair was supposed to show up tonight to, I guess, make her decision. I don't know if it's been made official. I assume it's official by now. Again, I haven't read the spoilers. I haven't watched the show. It's pretty obvious we're going to end up getting Charlotte and Rhea for the championship at WrestleMania. Of course, Rhea has to get through Bianca Belair first at TakeOver Portland, which is shaping up to be quite the show in a few weeks. And I will be going live on YouTube, by the way, after that TakeOver show on February 16th. For those who... I got a couple of emails about that. I don't always go live after the NXT shows. But being that this one is on a Sunday night, like a normal pay-per-view, usually it's on a Saturday. And so the NXT show is going to be standing on its own two feet this time. It's going to air on a Sunday night. It's a hell of a lineup. And I will be going live on YouTube for the TakeOver Portland post-show review in a couple of weeks. So that'll be something to look forward to. Magician Sapphire, thank you for the $10 super chat. If that was a real fan, he says, you have to be a special kind of stupid to attack Wardlow. That's true. That is true. That is a good point. That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that somebody would be attacking. Now, how tall is Wardlow? Somebody look up his stats. I don't know how tall Wardlow. He's not 7 feet, but he's got to probably be, what, 6'5", 6'6"? Maybe he just looks bigger. Just looks like a big guy because everybody else on this show is so small. Maybe that's what it... Maybe Wardlow is like 6'1". I don't know. Food Hive, thank you for the $5 super chat. I think they dropped the Nightmare Collective on AEW Dark the last 2 weeks with the therapy sessions with Brandy and the writing off of Kong. Well, I hope you're right. I have not had the chance to check out all of the AEW Dark stuff. So it's possible you're right. It is possible that you're right. And if so, I think that would be the best thing for them to do. And that would be, you know what that would be? That would be an example of them actually listening to their fans. Whereas on SmackDown, we have had to sit through Roman Reigns and King Corbin for what? 16 weeks now? No matter how hard we beg for the end of this storyline, it just continues. You would think that last Friday was the end of it. But I said that a month ago. I'm convinced this storyline is going to continue on for another 3 months in some form or fashion. I'm not yet convinced that we have seen the end of that storyline. So, kudos to AEW if they have dropped this and have bowed to the pressure of the fans, because this storyline is no good. Let's head on over to some of the calls and see what you guys thought of tonight's show. We had some real good ones a couple weeks ago, so we'll take a few here and maybe talk some news. I know some people duck out sometimes on this part, but we may talk some news here, so do so at your own peril. Let's go to the state of Michigan. We'll start there first. Area code 586. You are on the air.
Hey, Jason, it's Daryl from St. Clair Shores, Michigan. How you doing, man?
Good, Daryl. How are you?
I'm really good. Anytime Private Party's not on the show, it's a plus for me.
Come on now. What a party pooper you are. Now, what is it about Private Party you don't like? You just don't like kind of all the high-flying moves they do?
You know what? I will take my comment back about them being garbage. They are not garbage. However, I don't enjoy that brand of like lucha style where it's like so phony. It just makes the business look, it couldn't look any phonier than when they wrestle. Well, that's just how I just can't.
Well, what do you think about the Lucha Bros? Do you feel the same way about Pentagon and Phoenix?
No, because they're much smoother about everything.
I see.
It doesn't seem like their waiting time is for moves, setup moves is very, to me, they're amazing in the ring. I mean, they don't make it look phony to me. Like, you know, Private Party does, but anyway, I'm sorry. We're going ranting about Private Party again, but I wanted to say the last angle, really enjoyed because it made me uncomfortable. But the only thing I'm disappointed about, and I love MGF. I think he's the best thing on wrestling right now. I think he's amazing. He's so funny to me. And I know I'm not cheering him, but like he does have that heel heat that I love. And but the angle tonight to me like just makes, you know, Cody look like an idiot. And I just don't understand why they couldn't get this kind of or do some evil stuff with MGF without making Cody look like a fool. Like, I don't look at it like, oh, Cody's on there. Look at him taking it like a man. And then here comes, you know, Stephanie McMahon Jr., his wife come out and hold his hand and he could do it. And like, to me, it was just like making him look foolish.
Well,
and you know, then you get,
well, let me say this. I think part of what didn't help here is the fact that we just saw a strap match at the Royal Rumble between Daniel Bryan and The Fiend. And Daniel Bryan took probably a lot more than 10 lashes in that match against The Fiend, you know, one right after the other.
Yeah, he probably did.
Yeah, and so, and now they couldn't know this because they announced this weeks ago, I think before WWE even announced that there was going to be a strap match at the Rumble. But you go from watching that and hear Cody, it's almost like each lash, it's like he's being singed with a flame or something like that. It's like, dude, you know, you agree to it, just stand there, take the whips, you know, like anybody would in a strap match, and then move on. But, you know, it didn't bother me because the story is that he had no choice but to agree to this if he wanted to get his hands on MJF, right? And so he knows the rules. And look, if he really wants this guy that badly and he wants him in the ring, because he could go after him in the parking lot and then he'd be arrested. I'm just trying to think about this in a kayfabe way. He wants him in the ring.
Right, I get it.
Here are the parameters that you need to abide by in order to get your match with me. And he's like, okay, fine. You want me to take 10 lashes? I'll take 10 lashes. You want me to be in a cage match? I'll be in a cage match. So it makes sense. It doesn't bother me that much. Was it a little goofy, you know, having everybody come out as if he was being shot with a BB gun or something? Yeah, maybe a little bit. Maybe, but you know, probably that Rumble strap match didn't help, but that's not their fault though. I can't blame them for that.
No, I know. And I just feel like when a babyface, you know, chases a guy outside the ring and then their manager steps in front and then they move and they get nailed. It's like, that's how it felt 10 times of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just didn't prefer this way to get there, but I mean, the angle's good and, I'm actually excited to see Wardlow, but I was thinking the same thing when you said that, oh, everyone else is just small. I bet he's like 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah, I'm still waiting.
No,
I mean,
bigger than that.
They may have mentioned it in the chat. Again, I can only pay attention to so many things at once, but so if somebody mentioned it already in the chat, I apologize. But I'm just curious, if somebody looks it up, how tall is Wardlow? How big is he? Because I look at him, and I'm terrible when when you ask me, hey, how much does this person weigh or how tall are they, I'm awful trying to come up with this. But if I had a guess, my guess would be Wardlow is probably 6'3", 6'4", would be my guess.
Agreed.
Yeah, that would be – so we'll see. I saw one person
MJF
in the chat –
MJF is what, 5'10"?
Let me see here, because I met MJF briefly on the Jericho cruise. And he was only slightly taller than me. So I'm going to say MJF is probably in the, I'd say probably in the 5'11", 6 foot range, somewhere around there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He doesn't look that big on TV.
Everybody in the chat is saying 6'2". Wardlow is 6'2", which is pretty tall. 6'2" is 6'2" is fairly tall. My father was 6'2". So yeah, that's pretty... Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good way to put it. And we've only seen the guy wearing a suit. So, you know, I assume next week, or I guess in 2 weeks, he'll be in his gear. And we'll see. We'll see how good Wardlow really is. Wardlow is a darling of the chat. I can only imagine if he wrestles the first time and shits the bed that they'll turn on him very quickly.
I will turn on him if he wrestles in a suit, just like I turned on Shawn Michaels when he wrestles in jeans and cowboy boots. Like, nothing makes me more annoyed than when a guy wears street clothes, like when Dean Ambrose was in the jeans and the wife beater. It was like, oh, I just turned my stomach and
right.
I didn't do that.
Or when Shawn Michaels wears nothing and wears biker shorts like he did when he ref the Iron Man match. Yeah, that's no good either.
But, right.
All right. So anyway, anything else before I let you go?
No, man, I'm good. Have a great night, man, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. So that's our 586 call there. And let's move on here to, let's go to a different part of the country. Let's go out to, let's go to Delaware. Let's take that one first. 302, you're on the line.
Hey, Tom, what's going on? How you doing?
Good. Who am I talking to?
Tom McGavin, man. This is another long-time listener.
Awesome. Well, what's your question? What did you think of the show tonight?
I thought it was a great show. And here's the thing with AEW that I appreciate so much is the quarterly pay-per-view. And it just feels so much more special because of the time they take to build up to those bigger shows compared to WWE's 1 to even 2 pay-per-views a month type schedule. And it just makes the shows just feel less and less special each and every month, except for obviously the big four.
Yeah, no, I like the fact that there's not as many pay-per-views. It's still weird to me when I have to spend $50 or $60 on a pay-per-view just because I'm so used to the whole network model. That's a little weird. But so, and I think because of that, you expect these pay-per-views to be really good quality-wise, because if they're not, you feel really ripped off. I would imagine it's no different than if you bought a UFC show for $60 and the fights are boring and they suck and the main event is not exciting and ends in 15 seconds. You probably aren't very happy about that either. So I think there's more pressure on them, frankly, because of that, to put on a better show. And so the less is more. I like the model of a quarterly event. Somebody asked me recently, do you think that AEW can have something like a Clash of the Champions type show? Maybe you can't call it that because I'm pretty sure WWE owns it. And even if they didn't, I would say AEW needs to come up with their own titles and names. But maybe like a Clash of the Champions special twice a year to kind of fill the gaps between some of the pay-per-views.
Well, I did like the idea for the Bash at the Beach, but here's the thing that I was listening to Eric Bischoff's 83 Weeks podcast a few weeks ago, where he mentioned that AEW needs to be a completely owned thing. You know, they shouldn't have to rely on previous WCW, you know, pay-per-view names to bring in viewers. They should just bring in viewers simply because they have their own, because they have great programming. And I agree with that, and I understand that Cody is very, you know, his bloodline is enriched with WCW and Southern style wrestling, but it doesn't have to be kind of like a focal point within the company. It should be their own thing. Like 10 years from now, I want to be like, I watched this great episode of AEW of Dynamite, not this throwback version of Bash at the Beach. Not saying that those things aren't cool every once in a while, you know, to just, you know, bring up those nostalgia feels, but not being heavily reliant on the name of past events to bring in like past viewers.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, that's a good point. Anything else before I let you go? Because we got a lot of calls coming in.
Yes, I have just one question for you. I mean, I don't see the Elite being featured on TV forever. I mean, I always think they'll have their place on the card. And Cody's obviously the number one babyface in the company right now. Who do you see taking that role within the next 4 to 5 years?
In terms of the, like, top star on the show, you mean?
Yeah, so now you have MJF as your top bad guy heel. Who do you see replacing outside of the Elite? Replacing Cody Rhodes as the number one babyface in the company.
Well, I think Darby Allin can go a lot higher than he is now. Darby Allin has a lot of support, I think, from that base of fans there. I think he can go even higher than the level he's at now. Who's to say what stars may come over from WWE that are going to leave the company in the next 5 years? I mean, that's a long time. And a lot of the contracts that these people are signing now are 5-year deals, 3-year deals. So there may be some WWE names who are still relatively young who come over and are pushed to the moon, you know, like Cody and Moxley and Jericho. You know, I mean, they're the most popular names in AEW, and they're hardly AEW originals. So I think there's going to be a name or two from WWE that comes over, and not a Matt Hardy who's already in his mid-40s. I'm talking about somebody younger. I just don't know offhand who that might be. But I think Darby Allin is somebody to watch for. MJF, absolutely. And MJF, as big as he is as a heel now, I mean, it just, this is what happens. It's the cycle of life when it comes to a wrestler. He'll be an even bigger babyface. Now, that shouldn't be for a long, long time to come. But I think he could be that guy. You know, he could be that guy at some point as well. So those are a couple of names that stand out to me. Kenny Omega hasn't even really hit his peak yet in AEW. He's barely done anything in the company. So I think those are some of the names that'll be floating around the top, I think, in the years to come. But they've really got to bring in more names. You know, let me just mention this, and I'm going to talk more about this on Sunday, but I may as well kind of riff a little bit on it now. And again, you can call in right now if you want to call. We'll take a few more here, so if you're waiting on the line, just bear with me here. And again, hit that like button on the video. I actually haven't refreshed it on my screen. I don't know if we're even close to 300, but that was the goal. 300 was the goal tonight. And Michael Cuomo, thank you for the $4.99 super chat earlier. And Brian with the $5 disappointed Solomonster. We've seen a lot of those tonight. Super chat. Says, every time I hear Arn Anderson's voice, it sounds like I'm hearing Andy Reid talking. Well, unlike Andy Reid, Arn Anderson has not had a lot of success as a head coach so far in AEW. But I wanted to mention this. We heard that Killer Cross has signed with WWE. And Killer Cross is a guy that I've been a fan of for a long time now. I really did not see much of him until he took over that White Rabbit character, the Rabbit King, on Lucha Underground. I don't know that I remember him wrestling a single match as that character on Lucha Underground. But there was something about his presence and his promos, his verbal skills. There's just something about him that makes him stand out. Like, the guy could be an actor. There's something about him that makes him stand out from everybody else. I recognize that, even in Lucha Underground. Forget his time and Impact. So, him becoming a free agent was a big deal, because he was going to be a big pickup for whoever it was that landed him. Now, I have a lot of reservations about what WWE is going to do with him. I keep hearing all these stories about how they're going to fast-track him and all that, and they should. They should give him a big... I'm not saying push him to the main event right away, but they ought to put a lot in this guy, because I think he could be a real asset to that company as a representative of the company. He's very well-spoken, and as a talent on television. But that is a massive fuck-up by AEW. I did not read anything about AEW being interested in him, or if they were interested, you know, actively pursuing it. And maybe they did. Maybe we just haven't heard. You know, all the websites and the newsletters, they don't know everything. So I don't want to, you know, pile on AEW without having all the facts, but all we heard about was how high Triple H and how high WWE was on this guy, and Triple H met with him, and Killer Cross denied it, which of course probably turned out to be nonsense, because a week later we found out that he signed with the company. So obviously he was talking to somebody. He can deny it all he wants. But I never heard anything about AEW bidding for him, AEW meeting with him. And I just don't see how that's possible. I don't see how a company like that could not be interested in someone like him. He just has that quintessential pro wrestler look. He's a bigger guy. I think AEW can use more of those bigger guys. You don't want a roster full of, you know, Kip Sabians and you know, the Phoenix. They're all very talented guys. The Young Bucks, all very talented. But they're small guys. So you have a Wardlow. Okay, fine. Well, we haven't even seen Wardlow wrestle yet. I have no idea if he even knows how to wrestle. Having some bigger guys who can work, having some bigger guys with a presence, that's something AEW ought to be looking for. And they may get that with Brody Lee. You know, Luke Harper, my expectation, AEW will probably be where he lands. He'll be a free man in a few weeks. You know, his non-compete is going to expire. All signs seem to indicate that Luke Harper is going to end up in AEW. And I think that'll be a great pickup for them. And that's going to be a real opportunity for Luke Harper to kind of show people, hey, look at what I'm capable of here. WWE dropped the ball on me. But I heard nothing about there being any sort of conversations with him in AEW or any interest on their part, or at least not enough where they made a big play for him. And if that's the case, that is a massive screw-up on their part. If there's somebody who they should have gotten into a bidding war for, he's one of those guys. So that is a huge pickup for WWE. And now the hope is they don't fuck up. You would look at a guy like that and say, boy, it would be awfully hard to mess something like this up, but this is WWE that we're talking about here. I saw the story earlier that they've abandoned their trademark application for EC3. Now, maybe that means nothing. Maybe it's just some technical thing. I don't understand what's going on here. Apparently, EC3 filed some kind of trademark on the name last year. Maybe he just beat them to it. But it doesn't sound very good when you read that the company has abandoned their petition for a trademark on your name. I still cannot figure out for the life of me that whole situation with EC3. I'll never understand it. And hopefully one day when he's free and out of the company, maybe he'll do a shoot interview and maybe he can explain it for us. I don't even know if he knows. I feel sorry for the guy. I feel bad for him. So you never know what you're going to get with WWE. The grass is always greener. You hear these expressions. I hope things work out for him. But he would have been a big pickup for AEW. Let's take a few more calls here. Let's go to Philly. I believe it's Philly. Area code 484. Is this Philly?
Yeah, close enough. Reading, Pennsylvania.
Okay. I've been to Reading, Pennsylvania. I've been to the... many years ago, I used to go every summer to the old Bachmann Pretzel outlet factory, or I don't even know if they still have the outlets out there in Reading, but Reading is a very nice place.
It's kind of funny that you said that, because I live literally 5 minutes from that pretzel factory.
Wow, okay, awesome. Yeah, I used to love going there. It was a great place. I'll tell you just a quick story here. The one thing I remember from going to Reading, Pennsylvania, and I don't know how close it was to Reading, but it was on the way. We would be driving, and to this day, the steepest hill that we have ever driven up and down in my life, it was like a roller coaster where you kind of go up real slow, and then you go over the hump, and you think you're going to die. It's just this road in the middle of nowhere. Every time we would go to Reading, we would have to go over this road, and it would scare the shit out of me. So no offense to you. I loved Reading, but thankfully, we don't have to go down that road anymore.
None taken. You know, it's kind of like how they call the Midwest flyover states. It's a drive-through city, so
yeah.
No problem there at all.
Oh, yeah.
A quick thing there with the Killer Cross thing. Isn't he dating Scarlett Bordeaux?
Yeah. No, they're in a relationship. She's already signed with NXT.
Yeah, I think that might be the reason why if AEW was in the running, I think they were out of it quite quick when she signed with NXT.
Well, look, I mean, her signing with them, I'm sure, gave WWE or NXT or whatever a leg up. But what I'm saying is there were never any stories, oh, AEW has an interest in Killer Cross, or AEW has talked or made overtures to Killer Cross. Maybe they did, but it's weird. You know, we usually hear a lot of scuttlebutt about these things, and I don't remember ever hearing that about AEW. You know, he did a date last weekend with MLW. I thought there might be a chance they'd make a play for him because they're looking for a big TV deal. But all I heard was WWE. And I'm like, how could there not be more interest in this guy? You know, it just seemed weird to me.
Or maybe AEW just kind of figuring, well, Scarlett Bordeaux's there. There's no chance of getting him type of thing.
Possibly.
And maybe they just said, screw it.
But
you know, it's always that possibility, too.
Yeah, but yeah, I would certainly hope that they at least, you can't just take the defeatist attitude, though. If I were them, you still got to make the effort to reach out. I would hope that that's what they did.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. I thought it was a great show again tonight. Got flashbacks, you know, being where I live at. I was able to watch the, I guess you can call it the original 10 lashings with Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman as it aired.
Yes.
So hard not to get flashbacks of that. I mean, that was pretty, it was pretty cool, pretty powerful story angle tonight. And I hope this isn't a blow-off, you know, on February 29th. I would like to see this go on. But you know, with how things seemed to work. I thought they abandoned the Sean Spears Cody storyline a little bit too quickly for my liking as well. I hope they don't do that with MJF and Cody, which could be a possibility of that happening too.
Yeah, I mean, my impression there is, you know, Cody was very good friends, or is very good friends, with Sean Spears, and wanted to bring him in, so he worked with him, but the idea was never really to get Spears over. It was more, let's just give this guy something to do. So Cody got the win. Because look, Cody's a much bigger star than him. Yeah, it was the right move to make.
Oh,
looking
yeah.
back on it, I mean, it would have been foolish for Spears to beat him, unless they had plans to push Spears into the main event, and that was just never going to happen. But after that, I am kind of shocked. You know, they put Tully Blanchard with him, and I mean, you can count on one hand probably the number of matches that he's won since then. That's been a surprise to me, that they haven't really pushed him, even like at a mid-card level. It's almost like when he's on Dark, it's almost like the main event, like WWE has their main event show where guys like No Way Jose and Mojo Rawley usually are, and that's kind of the level he's at. He has settled back into the level he was at in WWE, and that's kind of surprising to me.
And none of us know what this new show with AEW that TNT is going to launch soon, what it's going to be. It might be another version, or hell, it might be Dark for all we know, but they definitely need a second show. If anyone needs a second show, and I know I say that and kind of grin my teeth a little bit, but if anyone needs a second show, it might be them, because they have a hard time getting all their guys in a 2-hour show. And I think that's what's suffering with the guys like Janela and Kip Sabian. I mean, like, it was complete silence because I don't think they don't see them every week. So it's kind of hard for fans to really latch on to a storyline that could have had some legs, maybe not, who knows. You know, but if they're not on TV and not able to really advance it truly, it's kind of hard to... You know what I mean? It's kind of hard to really grasp into the story of those two. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you said earlier.
Yeah, I get it. No, I understand.
And one last thing, and I know it's not AEW related, but the anniversary of Hogan Andre on NBC brought back some memories for me. I remember as a little Hulkamaniac crying when he lost the title, but then going insane watching him throw Earl Hebner over DiBiase and watching Andre have no interest in catching Earl Hebner.
I'll tell you what.
Kind of like one of my...
That is one of the scariest bumps that I have ever seen. So if people don't remember this or they never saw it before, when the match was over, you know, and Hogan has both Hebners in the ring and he's looking at one and he's looking at the other and he can't understand what's going on and all the heels are in the aisleway and their job, it's like today, everybody does a dive, right? We see a dive in every single match, the guys will crowd around and they catch you. That was their only job. Virgil, DiBiase, Andre, they were right at the foot of the aisleway and their only job was to catch poor Earl Hebner when Hulk Hogan picked him up above his head and chucked him over into the aisle. But Hogan just absolutely tossed this guy and he went soaring over their heads. And he just splatted on the ground. And it's amazing that he didn't get hurt. Actually, the only one who got hurt was Dave, as the story goes, because when Earl showed up, actually Earl was the referee for the match. He was masquerading as Dave. Dave comes out after the match. He's looking at his brother and Earl's looking at him. And the way we found out who the evil referee was because Earl punched Dave. And when Dave went down, if you go back and watch, Earl just wound back and kicked his brother in the ribs. And apparently he kicked him so hard that he broke his brother's ribs. He was probably all wound up. He was so excited, probably his first night.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that Earl didn't get hurt or concussed on that. I mean, Hogan just chucked him into the aisleway. And Andre...
Oh, absolutely.
But the thing about Andre, he could barely move. So it's not like if Earl was going over his head, what was Andre going to do? Was he going to make like a baseball play in the field where the guy dives for the ball? That was never going to happen.
No, absolutely not. But at the same time, it's like Andre kind of, if you looked at the tape again, Andre kind of like backed up. He was like, nope, forget this.
But look at that image on
your own power.
Yeah, and I have the image up on the screen right now if you're watching the video stream. Obviously, if you're listening to the audio here after the fact, you can't see it. But on the screen right now, on the right-hand side, there's that image of Ted DiBiase with that Winged Eagle Championship, that WWF title around his waist. And he went to house shows in the weeks following this event defending at least on two different nights, maybe more. He went around to different cities, announced as the WWF champion, and I think defended the championship until, you know, in storyline they stripped him and said, well, it doesn't count. You can't sell the championship to someone. But I kind of look at that image and I get a little sad because it's almost like what might have been. I think DiBiase would have made a great champion for a while there until Hogan came back, or maybe Savage, you know, would beat him later in the year for it. But I think he would have made a great champion.
Well, if the legend holds true, it's Honky Tonk Man's fault for not jobbing the title to Randy Savage that night.
Well, it's always Honky Tonk Man's
fault. There you go.
You just blame Honky Tonk Man for everything that's wrong.
Anything else? Politician of all.
Yeah. Anything else before I let you go?
No, man. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thanks for calling in, man.
All right, man. Thanks. Bye.
A legendary night in wrestling. I can't get over that. 33 million. What you're seeing in the middle of the screen, that's the newspaper ad that ran in many markets around the country back when these events were a big deal. They took out newspaper ads for these shows. And so that's the ad that ran in a lot of the newspapers around the country. Takes me back to the days I used to read TV Guide. The TV Guide would be on the coffee table. It's like when you had a phone book. You wanted to look something up, you had to go to the phone book. God, I'm an old fucking fart now. Oh, man, where does time go? The antagonist, thank you. I didn't miss you. $15 super chat, thank you very much. As I would listen to you talk about the DMV, best podcast going. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I promise you I will not be talking about the DMV. Let's take a couple more before we wrap up here. I've been enjoying the calls so far tonight. Let's go to the Lone Star State. Area code 409. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on? How you doing, Solo Monster?
Good. Who am I talking to?
You're talking to Joseph from Silsby, Texas.
Hey, Joseph from Silsby. Is that the hometown of Mark Henry? Is that correct?
Hometown. My cousin, you know.
Ah, that's right. Yes, that's right. This is the
I'm
Joseph.
The one with the New Year's Resolution. The New Year's Resolution to make a PayPal donation.
That's... Hey, whatever works for you is fine with me. This is Mark Henry's cousin from Silsby, Texas, which of course is the hometown of Mark Henry, who I do hear him every now and then on Busted Open. I know he makes appearances. I think it's each week on Busted Open Radio now with Dave LaGreca. So shout out to him. But what'd you think of the show tonight?
Oh man, it was great. You know, especially after the tough week I had dealing with, you know, the whole.
You're cutting out a little bit here. Come closer to your phone so we can hear you.
Oh, I apologize for
that.
There
we go.
Yeah, it was a good show, you know. Something refreshing, you know, because, you know, after, you know, everything that happened with Kobe last week, it was refreshing to get a good show, you know, trying to take my mind off it. But I had a quick question. Looking at the Inner Circle, they're kind of becoming one of my favorite factions in all of wrestling right now. And, you know, I hate to bring in NXT with this, you know, because it's all AEW, but you know how NXT had the whole with the Undisputed Era, everybody had a title. So I was just asking, you know, whenever they make that secondary title, do you think it would hurt the product if maybe the Inner Circle kind of did like them and, you know, everybody has a title?
I just think it would be so played out. It's like we saw Evolution do it. We had the Undisputed Era do it recently. I know there's been other examples of factions doing it. I don't know. To me, I don't think it's necessary. I think it would just be too forced. They don't need all the gold. And frankly, it just makes things boring. You know, you got to have some variety in your champions. So I wouldn't want to see that.
I hear you. One more thing, and I'll let you go because you might get one more. Looking at Jack Swagger, okay, I've never really been a Jack Swagger fan. But I'm kind of liking him in this, you know, quiet background, you know, I guess he's MMA-ish role. But when I look at him in the quietness, I don't know why. This is just me. Just get a second opinion here. Do you think he could pull off the Dan Severn gimmick? And let me explain. The Dan Severn gimmick, he was an MMA, well, like, you know, back when he first came in, and his gimmick was, you know, back to title again. He had titles, but see, he had outside promotion titles. So do you think that maybe with Jack Swagger, they could pull that off with him?
Possibly. I mean, it remains to be seen. We haven't seen much from him. I mean, he's kind of been a background player. You know, he's given a nut shot to a few people. He could be that guy. He could be kind of like the shooter of the group. He's got some legitimacy to him now that he's had some MMA fights under his belt and really hasn't been defeated. I mean, I know that disaster that happened in his last fight with the accidental low blow, but yeah, I think he could possibly be that kind of person. Although I would not, I wouldn't compare him exactly to Dan Severn. If you took Dan Severn of old and Jake Hager, I'd probably go with Severn if I had to pick who I think would win that fight. But yeah, I could see him taking up that kind of role.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for calling in, man. Always a pleasure to talk to Joseph and all the fine folks from the... we get quite a few calls from Texas, actually. And Turtle, I did not miss you. Or if you think I did, I promise you I did not. Turtlehead 2, earlier with the $2.99 Super Chat. Scarlet Bordeaux, he says, is his girlfriend. He's referring to Killer Cross. So that's from the conversation that we had earlier. So thank you for the super chat. I appreciate that. And Brian, with the $7 super chat a few minutes ago, I am still predicting a Moxley versus Okada match in the 2020 G1 Climax since they were a tag team. I could see that. I am very much looking forward this weekend. This weekend is the new beginning in Osaka on Sunday morning, which of course is horrible timing for me because I record my podcast on Sunday morning and I'm not staying up all night on Saturday into Sunday to watch this show. I wouldn't even do that for Wrestle Kingdom. So I don't know when I'm going to be able to watch the show. It probably won't be until after I do the podcast. But we have Moxley defending the United States Championship against Minoru Suzuki. They're going one-on-one this weekend, plus Naito will put both of his titles on the line against Kenta. And hopefully Kota Ibushi is back in action. He's been very sick. Ibushi has been described as very ill. I don't think he has AIDS or anything like that, but I keep reading these reports. He's very ill, you know. I don't know if he's got coronavirus or what's going on with Kota Ibushi. Apparently he has this thing called Mallory Weiss syndrome. I talked a little bit about it on the show this past weekend. And it has to do with there being some kind of a tear where the esophagus meets the stomach and... anyway, he was in a bad way, and I don't think he wrestled on any of the New Beginning in the USA shows when they toured this past couple of weeks. So hopefully, he will be back this weekend in Osaka. There you see the new Delusional Vincent Super Chat, which is not for any specific dollar amount. So you will see that randomly popping up. But thank you to Shane Adam Hughes for the Super Chat. Says, worst case scenario for this year's WrestleMania. I don't know. Are you just asking in general? Worst case scenario for this year's WrestleMania is that it goes 9 hours. I think they're trying to set a new record every year for the longest WrestleMania. So yes, that to me would be the worst case scenario. I'm not going to go live on YouTube at 2 a.m. after WrestleMania is over. I don't think the landlady downstairs would like that very much. She probably barely tolerates the sound of my voice now, and it's 11:30 at night. You think I'm going to be going live at 2 a.m.? You're out of your mind. Let's hope that doesn't happen. Let's take a few more. Let's go to the West Coast. California, 707, you're on the air.
Let's go. What's up, Jason? Coming from San Francisco, California. How's it going, man? Good night. I mean, good afternoon. Excuse me.
Yeah, good to talk to you. What's on your mind?
Good question. Actually, I had two questions, but I might ask you a third, but if I just remember right now. Actually, the first one, I don't know, just kind of, you know, anyone talk about the Inner Circle or anything about that, but I kind of want to hear for your opinion, bro, about what would be Jake Hager, since we haven't seen him wrestle that much, his first match on AEW or AEW... pay-per-view for overall. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it seemed like they were building to something with him and Dustin Rhodes. Didn't he break Dustin's arm? And we still haven't seen a match between them, so that to me would be the first match. That would be obvious.
I see. Yeah, that's true. That literally cut that match off like right away. So yeah, that was kind of a mystery.
Yeah, and it's an easy win for him. There's no reason that Dustin has to beat him.
Interesting. And going off of Aramis, kind of conned by Killer Cross, what do you think would be a perfect brand for him? Excuse me, NXT or I don't know, just any of SmackDown or Raw brand?
I want him to start in NXT. I want them to pair him and Scarlett up. I think they should be a duo. I think he could be pushed to the moon. If they're going to move Adam Cole at some point, or maybe not Ciampa. Ciampa said he's never leaving. Actually, Ciampa said that if they try to force him to move to Raw or SmackDown, he'll retire. So that tells you right there what he thinks of moving to the main roster. But if it were me, he goes to NXT. Now, if they want to put him on Raw or SmackDown, I put him on SmackDown, and the first person I feud him with is Daniel Bryan.
All right. Just last question. Since going up for that one guy's last, he said, what would be worst case scenario for a WrestleMania match? We think it would be a Triple H match or an Undertaker's match. That'll be it. Thank you, Jason. Have a good night.
Thanks for your call. I don't really have an interest in seeing either one of those guys at WrestleMania this year, Triple H or The Undertaker. I just did a poll, and I talked about it this weekend, in fact, on the podcast. You can find that clip here on the YouTube channel when you're done listening here. I asked people, do you want to see Triple H have a match at WrestleMania? And the overwhelming majority of you said no. It was like 22% yes, 78% no. I had over 5,000 votes. A lot of people chimed in. And the ones who did want to see him have a match, you know, a lot of the answers were the same. It should be against Shane McMahon, or it should be against CM Punk. One person said Paige, which made me laugh out loud. Or Paige's boyfriend. But no, I have no interest in seeing Triple H have a match at WrestleMania this year. It would be forced. There's no obvious story. He does not need to be on the frickin' show. Undertaker does not need to be on the frickin' show. If he's going to wrestle, let him have his retirement match 30 years after he debuted at the Survivor Series. This year's Survivor Series. I've already pitched the idea. Undertaker against Aleister Black. That's what I would do. And in the meantime, if he wants a Saudi payday, he can wrestle on one of the Saudi Arabia shows. But there's no need for him to be on the WrestleMania card. Let's go to New Jersey. Area code 856, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Solid Monster?
Hey, what's going on?
I heard you guys talking about Wardlow. I actually checked out a couple of his matches, and he's actually pretty good. He's pretty agile for his size. He kind of reminds me a little bit of a Brian Cage a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I can see that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think he fits pretty well in that bodyguard role for MJF, but I'm glad they're finally going to put him in a match, but hopefully the match does pretty well, though.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a big test for him. You know, Cody's a big opponent for him. I think Cody will bump his ass off and sell for him, which is great. And it's in a steel cage. It's probably going to be the main event on the show. So there's no bigger way for him to debut than against one of the biggest stars in the company in a big stipulation match a week before their pay-per-view. So it's sink or swim for him.
Yeah, and as far as Brandy coming out, I noticed when she came out, she wasn't dressed in any of the gear that she usually dressed in for the Nightmare Collective. I think they might possibly wrap it up.
Well, I hope so. From your lips to God's ears, hopefully that's the end of this horrible collective nightmare, as I call it, because I just think it's a stupid storyline and it just has no business being on TV.
Oh my gosh, I agree. Like, and I freaking love AEW. I've been behind it since day one, but they definitely need to get rid of it. And you were saying earlier that you haven't heard a single person that said they liked the storyline. I was talking with one guy on my Facebook, and I swear this guy is an AEW fanboy to the max. He loves everything that they put out. He loves the Nightmare Collective, too. And I'm just like, why? He couldn't really give me a good answer.
Look, I mean, people are entitled to their opinion. There's always going to be people out there who like something that's going on in the show that everybody else hates. But the vast majority of people, from what I've seen, are just not entertained by this storyline. Or some people just hate it. I wouldn't say that I hate it with a passion. I just don't need to see it on my TV. So the quicker they wrap up with this, the better off I think the shows will be. But anything else before I let you go?
Oh, yeah. One more thing about Joey Janela. You were saying earlier about Joey Janela that he, you know, he's either like there's something with his matches that is not really rubbing off too much on the crowd. I actually have to agree, and I actually happen to be a fan of Joey Janela's. I actually met him a couple of times at CZW shows, but he's definitely not, like, he's not somebody I put the main title on or a mid-card championship. He's, like, kind of an undercard a little bit. Like, it's just, I had a conversation with a friend about that, and he was like, how come they don't push Joey Janela? I'm like, bro, he's not that. He's good, but he's not somebody who would push over Kenny Omega or something like that.
Yeah, no, I think when, not if, but when AEW adds a secondary title, and I believe they will this year, sometime in the next 6 months, I think we're going to get a secondary singles mid-card championship in AEW. That's the sort of thing I could see Janela doing. You know, whatever they call it, whether it's a television title or whatever. I mean, NWA just added the TV title back, so I don't know if they'd want to do that. But I could see Janela competing for that at that level. I don't see Janela as a world champion. I don't see Janela as a top three or top five guy. I just don't see it. I think he's valuable to have. I think the spring break shows have turned into this huge thing. WrestleMania weekend every year. I think it's genius what he's doing here, putting Orange Cassidy together with Minoru Suzuki. He's going to sell out. People are going to be talking about that the whole weekend. I think it's brilliant. But in terms of him on the show and the ring, yeah, I don't see him as being at that elite level. I just it's just not something that I see. I want to make sure I didn't miss Brian, who got a $5 super chat in. Says, worst booking scenario, Charlotte Flair beats Rhea Ripley for the NXT Women's title. Oh, I guess I thought he was comparing it to something else. I guess that's the worst booking scenario. Well, you know, look, I think there's a chance it could happen because they're desperate. They have to be. It has to be eating them alive every week to see the numbers come in and see NXT losing to AEW. Especially because NXT is a lot of weeks better than AEW. Not every week, but a lot of weeks NXT is the better show. As Raw was many weeks back in the day, even though they were getting their asses kicked by Nitro every week. You don't think that annoyed the shit out of the people in WWE? You don't think that annoys Triple H or Vince McMahon? So I could see a scenario where Charlotte wins the title, and it gives them the perfect reason to put her on NXT for a few months. She has some new people to work with. She gets a break from the main roster, and then she comes back fresh a few months later. And in the meantime, they hope that she gives NXT some kind of boost on Wednesday nights. I think there's a very real possibility that that could happen. And that was my fear when people were first floating this idea before it even became reality. I wasn't sold on the idea. People were asking me about this on the last pay-per-view stream after the Rumble. Oh, what if they do Charlotte? What if she goes after the NXT title instead? And I said, I don't know that I like that idea very much. It could be a great match, but Rhea's got a lot of momentum right now. She's going to go against Charlotte Flair. That'd be like taking the most over guy in NXT, Keith Lee or somebody, right? Let's put him in the ring with Roman Reigns. Now, Reigns has lost quite a few matches. I don't want to make it sound like Roman just buries everybody in Rue and wins every match that he's in. But you probably have a lot of people who would hear that and be like, oh, shit. That ain't going to end well for Keith Lee. You know, there's a time and a place. Right now, they're building Rhea up. So, yeah, it worries me if they're just going to put her in a big match against Charlotte Flair. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Rhea's going to win. So I guess we'll have to see what happens. I'm very curious what they did on NXT tonight. I'm going to watch it sometime tomorrow. Area code 516. I believe this might be... Is this Jared on the phone?
Hi, Jason. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
It's Jared. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I saw the last name. I knew right away. I thought it was you.
Yeah, I got the super chat through the computer tonight. I guess it worked.
Awesome. Yeah, well, sometimes there's some hiccups, but tonight everything has worked out well as far as that goes, so that's good.
So you don't like creepy JR?
Creepy JR, yeah. That could be a new meme now, Creepy JR. JR's been a little creepy for a while now with some of the women.
It's getting a little...
getting a little uncomfortable. I mean, yeah.
Yes, after watching him for as long as me and you, as long as we've watched him back from WCW days, getting a little uncomfortable. But Tony still seems to be keeping it together. But Jim, just every week, seems to say something... You know, a little sad. You have your little sad tweet every week on your podcast, and you need a sad commentating line. But the Too Cold Scorpio thing was hysterical. That was hysterical.
Yeah, that made me crack a smile when he did it. And look, maybe they were talking. Maybe he was talking to Scorpio Sky. And maybe it was on his mind, and he just got confused. Maybe he didn't just kind of try to save himself by making up that story. But I just think... I don't know. I just think it's very funny that he would drop a Too Cold Scorpio reference here on this show for another guy who, I don't want to say that. But anyway, so what's your question here before I get myself in trouble? What's your question?
No, just a couple of points. You know, Chris Daniels running into the ring last and the Dark Order backing off. I think we're in for, a bro swerve here with the Dark Order thing. Just now it seems a little too obvious with Christopher Daniels.
Yeah, each week that goes by, I think it becomes a little more... I mean, I was talking about this 3 or 4 weeks ago, but every week now that goes by, it becomes that much more obvious, unless they want it that way, and then they're just waiting for somebody's contract maybe to come due, and then they're going to swerve us. I guess we'll see. Or, you know what? Why can't you have two people instead of one? Maybe it's Daniels and then somebody else, like a Matt Hardy or somebody. Maybe there's two people. Who knows? Because clearly they love this Dark Order thing. And unlike the collective nightmare, I don't see the Dark Order going away anytime soon. So if they're all in on this storyline, then hopefully they have a good payoff to this.
I just hope that this does not last as long as Aces and Eights.
Oh, my God. Why did you have to bring that up? Oh, no.
Hey, you went to the Nightmare Collective. I had to go to the next worst thing.
Oh, no, not the Aces and Eights.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. My bad.
The only thing about the Aces and Eights, and I've always maintained this, their theme music was pretty cool. They had a pretty cool theme.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Yes, it was. It was very cool. Weren't they, maybe it's next week, but weren't they honoring Missy Hyatt this week or something, or supposed to? Is that next week? This week? AEW?
I think this week. It probably was like on Dark. It might air on AEW Dark, okay. or it might have been a Dark segment. Okay. I remember them saying something about they were honoring the legends of I forgot what they called it, but yeah, they were honoring someone. Was it Missy Hyatt? I didn't hear her name mentioned. Was she part of that?
Missy. Yeah, it was Missy, yeah.
Okay.
They had a whole article about it on one of the sites, and I was like, well, I watched that blink, did I miss something? I don't know, but I was just wondering if you saw it, and I didn't. But, and another thing, didn't MJF say that Cody's mom was going to be in the crowd and she was going to be crying and all that other stuff, like Helen Hart and all that good stuff from back in 1994?
Yeah, I thought that was going to be for the Lashes, but I think that was meant to be for Atlanta, so that would be the cage match in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, and I do agree with you. I saw no wrestling sites saying linking Killer Cross to AEW. Only to NXT, WWE, and the other promotion that
MLW.
MLW, yes, that's the only ones I saw. Because that guy's got a presence in the ring, and I know it's just a few months, but they have Luchasaurus. Big guy. They have Jake Hager. I guess he's a big guy. They have Wardlow. He's a big guy. If they bring in Cage, he's a big guy. I mean, and Brody Lee. I mean, they need more big men. This can't be, you know, an under 5'10" wrestling league.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the point I made before. I mean, you and I are in agreement, so I think it's a big loss for them, and hopefully WWE will do right by him. But I'm going to let you go. We'll move on here, but awesome questions, man. Thank you for calling in.
Have a good night, Jason.
You too. Let's take this caller here. He's been waiting on the line a long time. Long time. Actually, before I take his call, let me check a look at the poll results again. And the AEW poll here, and it hasn't changed much. 79 up, actually about 80 up, 20 down. So that's about what it had before. And the NXT poll, 75-24. So not a radical difference from the way it was before. AEW has a slightly better score, but they also have about 500 more votes. So again, if you want to vote, you can do so at Solomonster on Twitter. Go cast your vote, thumbs up, thumbs down, and let me know what you thought of both shows. But this person's been waiting a long time, so I feel kind of bad. Let's go to area code 469. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hey, 469.
What's up, Jason?
What's going on?
Doing good. The show was all right. I just missed up on the Moxley match. I didn't get to see it.
So what did you see so far? What did you think just the overall of the show?
I really did like the end of the night. I really did enjoy it. But my question was, do you think MJF should have gone for like an 11th hit, and then Cody just either like blocked it or, you know, rushed it aside and started attacking MJF?
Yeah, I mean, I like what they did in that MJF is just a dick, and so him kicking him in the crotch and running off is just, it's great heat, you know, because he's just this chicken shit heel who just wants to get his cheap shot in and run away, which is probably why we saw one of the fans jump him in the crowd, because he got people all riled up. So I like the way they did it for that reason. I think it was just a cheap shot on his part, and it fits his character well.
Yeah, I just thought if it was that way, I think Cody would have got a louder pop, and I would have, you know.
Yeah, but it wasn't about that, though. But it wasn't about that, though, this week. That's not what this week was about. This week was about, and he got a good reaction as it was. I mean, the people were rooting for him, but I just think people were, the whole point was you want to make people feel uncomfortable. So this was not necessarily going to be a crowd that was going to be yelling and screaming the whole time. You know, they were probably going to be more subdued, because that was just the nature of the angle. So I think that was how it was conceived. I think it was a success in that way. And then next week, I mean, I guess the cage match is in 2 weeks, so I don't even know if Cody will be on the show next week. They may hold him off. But I think it served its purpose tonight.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah, he was waiting on the line for over 90 minutes, so I would have felt very... And again, a lot of these are random, so there's still people waiting a long time who unfortunately aren't going to make it through, but every line is jammed up. So to anybody who doesn't make it, I apologize. I wish I could get to everybody. I'm trying to get to as many as I can. We'll take a few more here. Let's go to Chicago. Let's go to the Windy City. Area code 773. You're on the air.
Boris from Chicago.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey, Jason. I was calling in. I was listen to the Torch and East Coast, and they really brought something to my mind that I didn't think about, and I was just waiting to see if it would actually manifest. This diversity thing is not really happening the way I expected it. You know, we got dinosaurs, you know, we got beasts, you know, we got androgynous people, Asians, everything. But we really don't have anybody that may look like Keith Lee, you know, the Keith Lees and you know, the Mooses and stuff like that. It's like, are we ever going to get any people like that and be number one contenders, you know, like Jericho and stuff like that? Because I know WWE does their own way of pushing, you know what I'm saying? And pretty much Bobby Lashley wasn't even in the Rumble to even just get knocked out by Brock Lesnar, or, you know, get thrown out by Brock Lesnar just to say that he was in competition for one of the titles. You know what I'm saying? And Big E and them, I don't think they'll ever see a title. You know, Kofi Kingston's the only one who'll get a title shot. And I'm just looking at, you know, I don't care about Moose. He's in TNA. I'm just looking at where the character's at, and they're out of reach to even be, you know, investing in. And I was real hopeful about AEW, but it's not looking real hopeful at this point. And then Rich Fan even went to Tony Khan and asked about this. And it's 2020 now. What do you think and how you feel about that?
So as far – you're talking about as far as there being more diversity and, like, African-American content on the AEW or
people look like me. People, yes, yeah, people on, look like me.
Right, on the AEW roster.
I'm a Keith Lee-sized person.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I love Keith Lee, and I think Keith Lee will go far, but even WWE has had their problems before where people get their hopes up about some of these guys, and then they get burned. Now, Kofi had – I was at WrestleMania last year. That was – I mean, there were people crying in the crowd, so that was a big moment, and it meant a lot to a lot of people. And Kofi, look, he got longer with the championship than I ever thought they would give him. And New Day is an act. How long has New Day been together now for? 5 years? 6 years? It's amazing they've been together that long. They're a big success story. AEW, when I look at the roster, I mean, you're right. I don't know, and maybe I'm forgetting some people who they have signed. I know in the women's division they have some people. They have Big Swole, who I think could be, you know, a bigger star at some point. Private Party, you know, they've got...
She did that destroyed by the Beast. So,
yeah, well, everybody, you know, right, I mean, now, everybody's being destroyed by the Beast right now, which I'm not a huge fan of, but
and I don't watch. I'm just not into that.
Yeah.
And even with the New Day, I'm not fans of the New Day, and I ain't even going to go into details why, but I'm just not a fan of that. You know, I'm a fan of characters that like Doom, Butch Reed, Ron Simmons as a champion, stuff like that. So certain things I'm just not, you know, it's not for me. And it's like I'm hopeful with this new company because they have no bad habits, you know, right now.
Yeah. But, well, look, I mean, one person that apparently he's a pet project for Tony Khan. Tony Khan is a big fan of his, and they gave him a little bit of a push a while back. He had a title match on TV against Jericho. He's doing the tag thing right now, but I know they're high on Scorpio Sky. And so they look at him.
He defended Tessa, so you already know how I feel about that. He defended Tessa, so that's a strike in the checkbox for him.
Did he? I don't remember. I don't remember. Did he comment on that at all? I don't remember if he did or not.
Yeah. Well,
well, look. Said, I mean, well, I don't know.
He's a tag team person. Yeah. I mean, I don't want that to be a token spot where okay, we'll just do this to do a checkbox. You know what I'm saying? I want a real push.
Well, let me ask you this though. So right now, using him as an example, he's doing the tag team thing. So he's going to be doing that for a while. They have SCU. Eventually, SCU will probably split, and then we'll see if they're serious about it. Then we'll see if they give him a singles push or if he just sort of falls to the wayside. He's a talented guy, and I think at some point, yeah, he could be that guy. He could be one of those guys that gets up in that upper echelon of top 5-6 guys on the roster. Outside of him. Look at the independents. Look all over the place. Who should they go after? I mean, who is that guy? I mean, is there a guy in Evolve? Is there a guy in some other promotion that you are looking at going, hey, this guy, you should sign this guy. You should push this guy. He could be a big star. He's big. He looks a certain way. Is there anybody that you can think of that is not under contract to AEW?
That's a good question. Like, because like I said, I'll just say what I can see as far as, you know, visually, which is YouTube, New Japan, anything. The only people I can see, you know, that, you know, without me, I don't even know how to search for putting black wrestler, you know, probably. But is like I said, Willie Mack, which now he's what is he? I think he's in TNA, and Moose, he defended Tessa, so he's not on my list anymore. You know, I cross them off just like that. And like I said, you know, Keith Lee, he's in NXT, and you see he already got Superman punched, so it kind of put the damper on him because, you know, you have to get a push without that type of stuff going on.
Yeah, but
on.
What does him getting really Superman – wait, hold on a second. Wait. What does him getting Superman punched have to do with anything?
What I'm saying, he lost to Roman Reigns already.
Yeah, but he was going to lose to Roman Reigns because Roman's a bigger star than him.
And that's you see my problem?
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Keith Lee, but he's not on the main roster. See, that doesn't bother me as much because I never expected them. I knew that they were pushing him to a point where he was either going to win the North American title or the NXT title. So they had him beat Roderick Strong. He's the North American champion. That told me, okay, they're not rushing him yet to the main roster. But clearly, to give him the spot with Brock that they did at the Rumble, where he was one of the few guys Brock didn't just toss out in 10 seconds, and he even got to knock Brock down. And you saw how the building reacted. The people went nuts when he gave him that shoulder tackle. That tells me that probably told them in the back, hey, there's something with this guy. So right now he's got a title in NXT, so he's not going to be, you know, going to the main roster. He's not beating Brock. He's not beating Roman. But I think his time will come. I look at him more than Lashley, more than anyone else, and I think Keith Lee could be that guy who gets called up and actually gets to a point where he can beat Roman Reigns. But he was never going to beat Roman at Survivor Series. I mean, that just...
And you know me, that was never my point. He's a style of character that I want in AEW, and I'm saying I've never had any hopes or high hopes or any type of investment in Keith Lee. As long as he's in that company, I don't have any investment because I don't even watch the product anymore. I listen to you guys, and I still have zero interest in that product. And that's why I'm saying I want characters that look like those people in AEW, and that's why I'm hopeful. You know, and like I said, I'm not high on Scorpio Sky, and right now he's a tag team champion. You know, and he's a existing character. I was hoping that when this new company from the ground up, when that first roster came out, we would have seen true diversity and not that version of diversity, which is it's to each his own, correct? So I just was hopeful, but hey, you know, that's where I stand.
Yeah, again, I go back to the whole question of are these people out there for them to sign? Yeah, you know, there have to be people out there that they can go out in AEW, that is, that they can go out and sign who fit the criteria that you're talking about here. As you're talking about this, I'm thinking in my head, is there somebody I can cite you as an example who fits that criteria and nobody's jumping out of me right now? Now, maybe they're out there. Maybe they're in another promotion. Maybe they're on the indies. But I don't know that there's this surplus of talent that fit that description that's going to satisfy what you're looking for.
I'm going to say it like this, but I'm not going to say where I got it from.
Okay.
But due to the fact that they hired Billy Gunn's son, the bar is low now, so you can pretty much bring anybody in and push them.
Well, the problem here's the problem, though, WWE. But here's the problem. WWE is signing everybody under the sun. They have they just signed Isaiah Scott. They're signing everybody who is not under contract and hoarding talent, and I think that's also hurting AEW because there's less people for them to choose from.
Yeah, and that's a sad thing. I already came to the conclusion, too. They're hoarding certain crap characters because they don't want them to go anywhere else to get pushed. So I do believe in that. You know, at least we're going to get Brody Lee. You know, I'm happy for that. But he's not going to come in until after the New Revolution. And I'm going to leave you with this. What do you think they're going to do with the New Revolution? Because I really don't have any hopes on it. But I'm hoping it's something really spectacular, because I really don't know at this point. But what do you think the New Revolution is going to be? And Brody Lee is not coming in on New Revolution. He's coming in, this, I guess, the place where he, you know, his residence. So, because they want a bigger pop, so they're going to bring him in where he, you know, where he resides from. That's all I have.
So just so I know, you mentioned Revolution. Are you talking about the pay-per-view Revolution, or are you talking about... the pay-per-view.
Yes, the pay-per-view Revolution.
Okay, the pay-per-view. Well, I mean, I still think... I could be wrong. I still think that they put the title on Moxley. I would seriously consider doing that. I mean, I like Jericho as champion, but, you know, maybe put the title on Moxley. Maybe have MJF win so that you can keep that feud going. I would debut somebody new, even if it's not Luke Harper, maybe it's somebody else, but I feel like you want to debut like a big new face maybe on that show and get people talking. And also get people that Wednesday be like, oh shit, I got to tune into Dynamite to find out, you know, the follow-up on this. So I think they have to do something big on that pay-per-view. I think we're still a few weeks away from me doing predictions, so I'll have to think about this. But yeah, no, they're going to have to do something big and try to get people interested.
Yeah, because I think they really finna try to do something big on Wednesday with Charlotte and them too. Charlotte and Rio.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, tit for tat. So if that's what NXT is going to do, then I'm sure AEW is going to turn right around and they're going to try to do something themselves. So. Yeah. All right. Well, this was this was an interesting exchange. I think it was good. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Jason.
All right. Thank you. So that was an interesting call. Interesting back and forth there as we pass midnight for what I think might be my longest Dynamite stream to date. So why not go a little bit longer even? We'll take a few more. Yeah, somebody in the chat just mentioned the Pope in the NWA. The Pope, though, he's not wrestling, right, at the moment. He's more of a kind of a manager. Speaking of which, I don't know where the hell Stokely Hathaway is. Malcolm Bivens now is his name in NXT. He signed months ago. We have yet to see him debut on TV. I like Stokely. Let's go to DC, area code 202. You're on the air.
Hey, Solid Monster. It's Garrett again.
Ah, our old friend Garrett. Isn't it past your bedtime, Garrett?
Well, you're dead. You know, there's no bedtime.
That's right. That's right. You are dead. You are dead, so you pretty much can stay up as late as you want.
That's true. I would like to – I didn't have any plans to call in, but there was a story that broke on Twitter recently that I just had to call in because knowing the historical thing today being that Ted DiBiase won the WWE Championship, it's sad to see that on the same day that he won it that his son's now facing hundreds of years of prison time for fraud and embezzlement. And by the state of Mississippi, he is now arrested and he's facing like charges of fraud and embezzlement with a group.
Well, whose son is this?
Ted DiBiase Jr., the son of Ted DiBiase.
Oh, wait. So this is the Ted DiBiase Jr. that was in WWE?
Yeah. This is a story
really?
That broke like about, 40 minutes ago. This is
a
news article that was posted. Right? So
hold on a second. I gotta see if there's anything on. So you're saying this is late breaking news here.
Yeah, this is something I popped up on Twitter. It said like the son of WWE legend is arrested and charged for fraud and embezzlement, which
because DiBiase had more than one son. So that's why I asked you if this is the DiBiase that wrestled and partnered with Cody Rhodes, or if this is one of DiBiase's other sons.
Well, in the photo, the article mentioned it's Ted DiBiase Jr. as well as used the photo for Ted DiBiase Jr. himself. So this is definitely the same person that we are talking about here.
Okay, so let's see. I'm looking this up right now. I want to see. Yeah, it's weird because usually on the news section of Google and stuff, something would come up. So I'm just checking Twitter in real time right now to see. I believe you. I just want to see what this story is, so I can read it for everybody else. So just give me a second here. That's wild.
Just look up for bodyslam.net. I believe that's the one story that broke it.
Okay. Well, let's check that out right now. We have some breaking news here on the stream. Let's take a look here. Well, that didn't work. BodySam, that's not a real site. See, I lose the ability to type here after midnight. Let's see what the news is here. BodySlam.net. Here we go. All right, let's see here. Son of WWE Hall of Famer Ted DiBiase arrested for fraud and embezzlement. Special agents from the Office of the State Auditor have arrested John Davis, the former director of the Mississippi Department of Human Services, and Brett DiBiase in connection with a multi-million dollar embezzlement scheme. And see, that's what I thought. I think they used the wrong photo here. I think this is the other DiBiase son. The indictments include a range of violations, including fraud and embezzlement. Now, Brett is the one who I think started his career and then fizzled out very quickly. So it sounds to me like this might be about Brett and not Ted Jr.
Yeah, that's what the chat's saying, but you know, the website uses Ted DiBiase Jr.'s photo, so I'm just like, put two and two together. Yeah, I didn't know that he had like a second son. So
yeah, it says right here, former WWE developmental wrestler Brett DiBiase was arrested after being investigated for fraud. It's weird, too, because this picture, he looks so much like his brother. I mean, that I thought at first it was Ted Jr. So if this is what Brett looks like, Brett DiBiase, at least whenever this photo was taken, looks a lot like Ted Jr. Well, that's pretty terrible, I guess, for the DiBiase clan. That sucks for them.
Yeah, it's just one of those, especially today of all days, where, you know, we celebrate the anniversary of the Andre and Hogan 2 match. This is what happens with his family. So,
well, maybe his father, can buy him out of prison. You know, he can bribe somebody and get him out from behind bars. You know, after all, he is the $1 million man. He should be able to do that. Is there anything else here before we wrap up here?
I was also going to say probably could send him a prayer because I know he's like a pastor nowadays, but.
Ah, yes.
Other than that.
Yes, I will say 10 Hail Marys for him.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that I was going to call around Revolution time just to talk about fantasy booking, so I'll just hold that question off for later down the road, talking about, since they announced Double or Nothing and All Out, just look at the long-term plan for it, but we won't know until, like, Revolution wrapped up to see where the story's going. So other than that, this is pretty much why I wanted to inform you of tonight, so...
Great.
Also, looking at the photo, it is like it's definitely not Ted DiBiase Jr., but I just like they look oddly similar. So I guess that's a screw up on my end.
Yeah, it's like the evil Hebner twins. They look very much alike.
They're identical.
Yeah, identical. Oh, that'll never get old. That'll never get old. What a crying, whiny little bitch Hogan was in that promo. To think I grew up a Hulkamaniac. I'm ashamed.
Oh, don't worry. It wasn't the worst one, though. Like, we'll go back to World War III, where he changed the finish midway match and then just, like, got ruined Savage's, like, world title win after that match.
You know what I always enjoyed? I always enjoyed it when Hogan would cut promos back then on DiBiase, and almost every single time without fail, he couldn't just call him the $1 million man. He would always call him the multi-$1 million man, because it wasn't enough. He always has to exaggerate. So he was the multi-$1 million man. And he saw the dollar bills falling out of the referee's pockets. I couldn't see it. Could you see it? Because I couldn't see it. But he saw dollar bills falling out of the ref's pockets. Hogan was a piece of work back then.
Yeah, I guess so. But as far as like an African American wrestler they may pluck from, I think it's perfectly safe that they should go for the perfectly sane individual of ACH is still out there.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, it doesn't sound to me like ACH fits the physical build, though, that he was looking for. He's looking for a Keith Lee type. ACH is a tiny man, so ACH, I don't think, would have cut the mustard there.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, there's always Cheeseburger if you want to talk about cutting the mustard. So.
Cheeseburger, yeah, that makes me very hungry. Thanks, Garrett. Now I'm hungry. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm sure you're going to have, like, a snack after this is over, so.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for calling in. I'm sure we'll reconnect in the next few weeks.
Sure thing. Appreciate
all right.
it.
All right, have a good night. So that was Garrett from the great state of D.C. calling in. Garrett is dead. That's an inside joke going back to the first time he called in. He is, I guess, the undead. I feel kind of dead. It's quarter after 12 here. See, he thought it was... He got me all riled up here. I thought this was a big breaking news story. Ted DiBiase Jr. arrested. Then I find out it was Brett DiBiase, probably the black sheep of the family. It's like, eh. not as big of a story all of a sudden. Oh, my goodness. Let's go back to Illinois. Is it LaGrange or LaGrange Park? Is that where you're calling from? 630 is on the line?
Near Chicago. this in from Goofy Poop. His name sounds familiar to you. I'm the guy that got you the shout out at WrestleMania 33 from George Mizanin.
Ah, yes, that's right. And actually, I love that video clip because what he did was he was in the crowd in Orlando at WrestleMania. And I think I might have opened my review actually on the YouTube channel with this. And he got the Miz's dad, who I'm a big mark for. I'm big mark for George Mizanin. And he got George to do a shout-out on camera to the Solomonster Sounds Off. So that is one of the cooler things that anybody has ever done for me. So I thank you for that.
No problem. Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, oh, man, I got it. Because I wanted to go to your shot, meetup you had, but we weren't able to make it in time. So when I saw Jordan Muzan in the crowd, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, there's some way I can send a thanks, you know, for everything you do on the podcast. As far as tonight, I just want to say, I think with the AEW show, I thought what they did with Brandi Rose was just, like, so much better than anything they've done so far during the whole Nightmare Collective. And, that felt like, just the real emotion, something I think people could really relate to, with a wife, a husband, being there for one another. And I know a lot of people aren't a big fan of Jim Ross's commentary nowadays, but I felt tonight at the end when MJF kicked Cody Rhodes in the balls, it was kind of like that old fire from Jim Ross from 20 years ago. So I just thought that was really good in a segment. And my question to you would be, because I just feel like they're not utilizing Luchasaurus a lot on AEW. And this is a guy I think can really go on to be a big main player in AEW. What are some of the ways you would like to see Luchasaurus utilized more to get him to that main event level?
Luchasaurus, I think, is, we haven't really seen him featured much lately, but I think he's one of those guys. Actually, kind of feel bad I didn't mention him earlier when I got that question about in the next 5 years, 3 years, who do I see, as being one of these big names that's going to break out into the main event scene. And I think he's definitely one of them. He's a big guy, but he can do things that a big guy shouldn't be able to do. And he, he's got a lot of personality. He's exactly the kind of guy who I think that could be built up to a main event level. So right now it's just, there's no space for him, at the moment, but at some point, I think he'll have his chance to break out. Jungle Boy, too. Although, I don't see Jungle Boy as a world champion, per se. But I think Luchasaurus will have his time.
Yeah, I really hope so. Songmaster, thank you for everything you do for the podcast and giving us some audio to listen to. It's always great to be able to listen to you when I'm at the gym working out or on a long commute and everything. So thank you. Been listening to you since 2013.
Thank
Keep
you,
up
man.
The awesome work.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. That means a lot. So thank you to him. There was some audio that played before two different times. One was WWE. Another one was a live stream. I don't know. YouTube is being all weird right now. When I opened a new window to see if there were any new super chats, there was like recommended videos playing and live streams. So I didn't know if that was coming in just on my headphones or not. But anyway, let's actually, there was one more super chat, I believe, that came in. Brian, I believe I neglected to mention Brian. For the $5 super chat earlier, great booking idea, he says. The AEW Great American Title as the name for the secondary belt. Yeah, I could see that. Dusty was the American Dream. Cody's the American Nightmare. They want to, follow on the American theme. The Great American Title. Maybe. I think they could probably do better. I think they could do better than that. I think this is a good time to wrap it up. We've gone longer than I thought we would. This has been fun. A lot of interesting calls tonight. Interesting is a good word for the mix of calls we usually get here on these shows. I know some people are, some people aren't always as thrilled. I think it's great. Even the weeks where it's bad, I think it's great. There are the results of the polls up on your screen, pretty much unchanged from before. But one thing is consistent: Wednesday night still gives people the best night of wrestling all week. So whatever faults you may find with either show, between NXT and AEW, you're probably getting the best shows all week long. Certainly better than whatever that shit was that we got on SmackDown last week. What has happened to SmackDown? My God. What has happened to SmackDown? If you didn't leave a like, thumbs up, you can do so after. I'd appreciate that. That'd be very cool. Thank you to everybody who has donated tonight. I very much appreciate it, as I do every week. All of your support, it means so much, especially with all the calls we took tonight. I'm sure I got charged. I'm sure they must have rebilled me once my balance went down. So part of that Super Chat money will go to pay that so we can take more calls next time. I will be back for episode 638 of the podcast this Sunday. And hopefully at some point, even if it's not on the Sound Off, I do hope to talk about the New Japan New Beginning in Osaka, which takes place this Sunday, February 9th, including Moxley and Suzuki, a match I'm very much looking forward to. And the NXT TakeOver show is not this Sunday. It is the following Sunday. And I'll be going live on YouTube after that as well. That's President's Day weekend. We've got the AEW pay-per-view at the end of the month. We've got sweet Saudi Money 5 staying alive coming up. I'll probably be going live after that show as well. So a lot of live content, a lot of good stuff coming to the YouTube channel. Please hit that subscription button if you are not already subbed. That way you will get an alert every time I go live. Maybe I'll just go live randomly and I'll take your questions. So you need to be subbed for that. Until next time, be well, stay safe. I'm out. I got a lot of work to do. I'm probably not going to bed now until 3 a.m., but what the hell are you going to do? Thank you for all the support, and I will see you back here for more Sound Off on all the usual platforms this Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.